Good morning. Much of what we'll be talking about involves creating strategies to effectively present difficult technical material to students. So I'd like to begin with a brief story about this. Albert Einstein once traveled across the Atlantic on a ship. On the same ship was Chaim Weizmann, one of the founders of the Nation of Israel. And the two of them frequently had dinner. At the end of the trip, some reporters asked Weizmann about his conversations with Einstein. And this is what he said. Einstein explained his theory to me every day, and on my arrival, I was fully convinced that he understood it. I'm going to emphasize three things in my brief remarks. One, the ways in which liberal studies and engineering can broaden participation in engineering education. Two, the need for rigorous research to undergird these activities. Three, it's not enough to have a fine idea. You have to be able to implement it in a university, and there are some built-in barriers and changes. So I'd like to start by just a brief historical reference. There has been much discussion over centuries, really, of the relative role of the humanities and the sciences. There was a debate in the 19th century between T.H. Huxley and Matthew Arnold. In the 20th century, the debate really was framed by C.P. Snow. And I have here a quote from Snow. When he refers to Greenwich Village and Chelsea, he's talking about his conversations with his literary colleagues, and he finds that since he traveled in both worlds, he was trained as a scientist and then wrote novels, he found that the people in one world were talking about things and in ways that didn't relate to what the people in the other world were talking about. He called this the two cultures, and this is part of the historical context. In terms of broadening participation, this is a study conducted by Wang et al. They looked at longitudinal data from 12 graders, in particular their SAT scores. I've been a consultant to the president of the College Board about the SAT. I'm very much aware of the limitations of the SAT. Nonetheless, I think these data are quite interesting. Then they looked 15 years later at the occupations of those students. These were all college-bound seniors, 1,490 of them, age 33. Those who had moderate math and moderate verbal scores, 14% went into STEM. High math, moderate verbal scores, 49%. Then the group that in some ways we might be most interested in, high math, high verbal, and it drops. We are losing some very able people in STEM education who are drawn to other fields. Now, granted, these data were about STEM education, but I also have data specifically about engineering education. I want to mention briefly, apropos the last slide, a very exciting course that was developed in the Claremont Colleges, funded initially by the National Science Foundation, then funded by the Bechtel Foundation. It's in its eighth year. This course is not about integrating the humanities with the sciences, but it is about integrating in an interdisciplinary fashion. It's highly unusual. It's a double-length course each week, which combines physics, chemistry, and biology. And for each year, I've been the external evaluator of this course. They've had enormous success as measured by all kinds of quantitative indicators, number of science courses the students go on to take, research experiences they have, and so forth. I'm mentioning it here for one reason. Each year, I do analyses, statistical analyses, to try to predict students' grade in this course. It's an interdisciplinary course. And we have their SAT scores. We have their self-concept measures. We have their expectations about college. All kinds of measures that you typically see in research about undergraduate STEM education. I've been surprised that virtually every year, the single greatest, strongest predictor is verbal SAT score. I never would have expected that. So what I conclude from this is that there's something about interdisciplinary study that attracts people with high verbal skills. And it's not surprising, given some of the issues we'll be discussing about critical thinking and liberal studies in general and liberal studies in engineering. Here's the conclusion of another article about who stays in engineering, who studies engineering. We believe that the greater workload engineering demands in the PAC curriculum require students to choose between earning the engineering degree and participating in enriching educational experiences. I think much of our conversation today will be about enriching educational experiences. And here's a similar quote from an international conference on the role of women in engineering education. You can read the whole quote. I'll just point out some comments toward the end of this quote. Many non-engineering students may have considered studying engineering if there had been more subjects from the humanities and the social sciences included. So it's entirely possible that a liberal studies in engineering program would attract students who now find they can get more enriching educational experiences, more challenging educational experiences elsewhere. In addition, most of my work for the past couple of decades has been about broadening participation in STEM and about increasing the number of women, increasing the number of students of color, increasing the number of students from poverty. In the interest of time, I'll just mention that I have worked with a consortium of colleges and universities in Houston. They set a very ambitious goal. They wanted to see if they could double the number of underrepresented minority students who earn bachelor's degrees in STEM and do that in 5 years. And they fell a hair short, but they basically accomplished that goal. And we have worked with them, a colleague and I, and we see the strategies that have worked. Through years now of research, we know the factors that are barriers that make the study of engineering and other STEM subjects seem unwelcoming to women and to underrepresented minority students. And we've also learned strategies that can make the difference, that can turn this around. For example, effective mentoring, effective advising, creating peer groups oriented toward academic excellence. The Houston program is part of a national program funded by NSF called LSAMP, which is really a hidden gem, I think, in the federal government. It has been responsible for producing many graduates, bachelor's degree graduates, who are students of color and many who are women. And we need more programs like this. I think that liberal studies in engineering could attract and facilitate the success of people, young people and older people from demographic groups who presently are underrepresented in engineering education. We also have to consider that it's tough to change programs in universities. The president emeritus of Cornell University, Franklin Rhodes, has discussed what he considers to be the cardinal rule of academic governance, which is that in a university, you should never, under any circumstances, do something for the first time. I've conducted a number of evaluation studies about science reform in universities. Earlier in my career, I conducted evaluations of three national programs of the National Science Foundation. One of them, for example, is called EPSCoR. And this is a program that I wrote a book about the early years of EPSCoR. I think to this day it's the only book that's been written about that program. And the EPSCoR program at NSF and in other agencies now funds more than $400 million a year in research and scholarship. In looking at these capacity building programs, my colleagues and I were able to see what factors made possible or constructive organizational change. And I don't have the time today to go into all of these, but this will be the subject of discussion and panel groups during this workshop. But just as an example, we looked at the many ways in which skilled collaboration made a difference, effective leadership made a difference. And as I say, I've written about this at length. I'd be glad to talk about it at length, but a lengthy discussion is for another time. I will note that one of the strong barriers against constructive curriculum change, and I say this not as a pessimist, I'm an optimist, but we should be realistic about the built-in inertia in academia. One of those strong barriers is that professors get jobs, get promoted to tenure, and then the full professor, based mainly on research and publications and peer-reviewed journals. And they know that teaching will be weighed less and curriculum change will not be rewarded as much as research. We need research to explore what works and what doesn't work. In liberal studies in engineering, we need strategies that will help overcome some of these built-in barriers in higher education. Larry and I have submitted a modest proposal to the National Science Foundation as one of the next steps in this process, a feasibility study. Essentially, we want to visit universities where there's some interest in liberal studies and engineering, and we want to conduct in-depth interviews with administrators, faculty, and students. And when we speak with these groups, we are interested in talking both with those who favor the idea of liberal studies and engineering and those who oppose. But we're trying to get a sense of what the climate is in a university, whether there'd be a welcoming of this kind of effort, what the barriers might be, what strategies might meet the needs of all participants. The humanities are very much a part of the discussions at this workshop, so I thought I'd close with an excerpt from a poem that that really talks about broadening participation and hidden talent. Some of you may know the poem. Thomas Gray, a British poet, wrote Elegy in a Country Churchyard. He visited a cemetery in a remote, rural, poverty stricken area of England, and he wrote this eloquent poem about the graves he sees and the tough, hardworking lives these people had lived. And he muses about what it would have happened if they'd been born into other circumstances. This one could have been a great scientist. This one could have been a leading statesman. And this is just one excerpt from that poem. Many a flower is born to flush unseen and waste its sweetness on the desert air. I think this is an exciting conference. I think that liberal studies in engineering, when implemented effectively, which we're very much trying to do, can broaden and strengthen participation in engineering education. I look forward to these discussions. Thank you.